to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in our 16th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we have a discussion with Paul Burns, the president and CEO of the Canadian Gaming Association, on the legalization of sports betting by the Canadian government and what it means for the provinces and the industry as a whole. This week's show is supported by Konami Gaming. Later in the program, we'll be discussing the world premiere of the Dimension Top Box, debuting this month at G2E. Paul Burns was instrumental in the launch of the Canadian Gaming Association in 2005 and became the vice president at that time. In 2018, he was appointed president and CEO and recently led a successful effort to establish full sports betting in Canada via a bill in Parliament. He explains how that came about and what to expect as the provinces are now acting to establish sports betting. Burns also talks about the long shutdown endured by the Canadian casinos during the pandemic and how they survived it. He spoke with me at G2E in Las Vegas earlier this month. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. Our guest is Paul Burns today, the president of the Canadian Gaming Association. And Paul, thanks for joining us today. It's great to see you.
It's great to see you. It's nice to be here in Las Vegas.
Yes.
Thank you.
It's been a while for that we've seen anybody. So I'm glad to see anybody, that's for sure. So let's start off with, first I want to congratulate you on getting the full sports betting bill through the Parliament in Canada. That's a long haul. Tell us how that happened.
Well, it was like I had my first meetings with politicians in Ottawa in probably 2008 or 9. Mm-hmm. We had our first bill in 2011. The success was quick.
Right.
And then not so quick, because right. We had the bill passed actually on unanimous consent voice vote in the House mm-hmm. of Commons, and then right. died in the Senate, where they didn't even want to vote on it for right. 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. So this was, the latest one was bill number 4.
Right.
We had two bills in this parliament, one mm-hmm. by the government, one through a private member's bill. The government opted to not proceed with their bill, and
right.
back Kevin Waugh, an MP from Saskatchewan, who put it forward. And so we got in and got through and had great help from the senators who really the mood had shifted from our previous visit to the Senate in 2013, 2014, 2015. And this time, the big difference was the professional leagues were there with us. They right. were very mm-hmm. active, and they right. came to committee, and with the commissioner of the CFL, mm-hmm. The NHL appeared. They needed, those voices needed to be heard.
Sure.
They wanted
right.
to hear them.
They wouldn't even speak up before this, right?
No, they actually didn't. They didn't really do anything last
right, yeah,
few times.
Right,
they didn't.
Sure.
They weren't really opposed, and right. they weren't really in favor. Mm-hmm. But we've built this great coalition over the years with labor, because
right.
There's Unifor, which is a big private sector labor union, represents mm-hmm. a lot of casino workers. They've been with us through the thing. Municipalities, the city of Windsor and Niagara
right.
Falls, which
yeah.
have a huge presence in the industry, were there. The amateur athletic community in Canada
okay.
actually. Came, the Canadian Olympic Committee
okay.
came to speak, as did Soccer Canada, mm-hmm. and so it was really a nice, diverse group.
Yeah,
to the point where I could actually, the gaming industry wasn't at the forefront when
yeah.
it came to the hearings.
Yeah, sure.
Because we talked about the need for regulation, the need for oversight, and the massive amount of money that was going into the gray and
right.
black market in sports mm-hmm. in Canada, which
yeah.
is enormous,
mm-hmm.
and it needed to stop, and it
sure.
was only getting bigger.
Right, right. You know, I remember going to Caesars Windsor sometime in the early 2000s, and exciting to see a sports book. And I go up to the sports book, and the guy says, "Oh, you got to make two bets." I said, "Well, what? I don't understand." You know,
yeah.
Then I realized it was like the Delaware model, which they allowed sports betting, but you had to parlay. So, how much of a roadblock was that?
That was funny, because that was the only place. Otherwise, you would have had to play three bets if you'd gone to a lottery cast down
yeah,
the
right,
street.
Course, right.
So it was marginally better.
Right.
I mean, that was clearly, because when you looked at the provincial sports lottery products, did about $500 million a year.
Right.
And the offshore online sports books were doing $4 billion in handle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We estimated that organized crime was probably doing 10.
Right.
Based on the activity that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they were online too in a lot of cases. And it was easy to say, but it's the product wasn't right for the consumer.
Sure, right.
And if you can't offer what they want, they're going
right.
to go find it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty adamant. We said, listen, it's, you know, this isn't changing.
Yeah.
Technology and growth of internet, most Canadians, we stopped polling because it was like, well, when 80% think that online gaming was regulated and licensed and being taxed, you know, and what none of it was kind of like, okay, we're not, the condition has set in, people are attuned, and governments, you need to change your ways. And so on a whole host of that, it was really easy on that front, because in the land-based casino sector wanted to offer sports books, they wanted to offer this, they couldn't compete any kind of product, and having that, it was hard. And so, and with PASPA, you know, being struck down and the U.S. moving rapidly, it just, I can say that helped too, because it was the inevitability, because of that, that this is coming and it's accepted. And
I remember one of the grabs you guys put together was all the states along the Canadian border that offered sports betting, and it was like, you can just cross the border and sports bet anywhere, basically, you know.
We can, and the media penetration, because most of the Canadian population lives within two hours of the border, it's significant. Yeah. So it's like, it turned on the TV and you could see sportsbook ads and other things that for quite frequently, and then that also led the gray market in Canada, new entrants and more advertising, because they were free to advertise .net and play for free stuff.
Right.
That just piled on. And so the volume has kept going up and up and up. And
for sure.
It hasn't stopped yet.
Right. So obviously the devil is in the details, however. I mean, have you hashed out all the regulations and stipulations that are in this bill? And are you happy with the final result?
So the great part of, and then where more work still needs to be done, is that once the few words that had to be changed in the Canadian Criminal Code were done, we were done with the federal government's involvement. Right. So we have nothing. It's now turns back to the provincial gaming regulators to do their work.
Okay.
The association, we started, while the bill was still being considered, we have a committee of, we work with, we call our Regulatory Innovation Committee. Mm-hmm. We have a table where industry and regulators can sit. We talk through issues. Mm-hmm. So during COVID time, we had actually really productive time with that committee. We did draft standards for cashless wagering in casinos, and then we moved on to sports betting. And so what we were able to do is share and educate, and doing everybody along, we invited some regulators from the United States, we invited professional sports leagues, operators, we talked about fantasy, we talked about everything, and being able to bring that level up. Now, what we've seen is that Ontario, which is opening their online market to the world later this year, early next, they were first to get their standards out.
Right.
You know, it's all the products are available in Ontario. Mm-hmm. So from live in-game to daily fantasy to pools and everything, everything's in. There was no exclusions on product, which was what we wanted. Mm-hmm. Other provinces are still working on it. So what, as you can appreciate, the provincial lottery corporations have always had a bit of an upper hand with their products, especially online. So most of the online sites have been launched. There's no retail sportsbook open yet in Canada, which we're a little bit getting concerned about, because it's like time is ticking and casinos would like to see this as they start to build back their business from COVID because of those long shutdowns we've had in Canada. So we're, so far the regulatory regime and everything is coming along quite nicely. I've put the minimal complaints, so I take that as a good sign.
Yeah,
and the AGCO in Ontario was very cooperative, working with and listening to stakeholders, and continue to. And they recognize, they've said to us, listen, we know this is a living document. We, as things will change, as market opens, we may need to make tweaks, we will. And we're going to see that from other provinces.
Sure.
Sports and what it's going to look like in different jurisdictions. Province of Alberta had put out a request for information looking at retail sportsbook and casino with a mobile option. And whether they would invite a number of operators in, maybe a more tethered market, in the sense of we'll invite a few operators in, they can partner with casinos, and they can have a mobile app that's available through the whole province. They're still working through those details. The Saskatchewan Indian Gaming Authority, which operates seven casinos in Saskatchewan, have been given by the province of Saskatchewan a mandate to run all of the online gaming in that province, because currently they don't have a lottery capers offer, it's all been gray market. And they're going to do sports and online gaming, and so they issued an RFP this week to look for that partner. We've got others really standing back and taking a look and saying, we're just going to see what happens. And I think I know what's going to happen. Because the gray market will continue outside of the province of Ontario.
Right.
Ontario will be, it'll be black and white, it'll be clear lines of what's legal and what isn't. The rest of the country is going to continue on in the same, because no other province has started to make a move yet. Alberta, if they do the model of a tethered, that starts the process. Saskatchewan too. But everywhere else, I think the gray market will still continue and flourish. And they're going to realize they need to give customers choice. That's part of what this is. And if you can't do that, then you're going to...
And I think that's the mistake New York made right now. Only four operators are allowed there. And, you know, so you're going to block out a lot of the ones that are really popular. So
you will. And the customers don't get the right offer, the right odds. They're going to look. And it's you know, we've seen it because we saw the volume of wagering that was going on lately. We know what's going to happen.
Absolutely. So obviously, some of the big players want to get into it. The DraftKings and FanDuel. I know BetMGM would love to be in Canada as well. Do you think they're going to be able to get a foothold anywhere?
Well, this is the interesting part. Yes, I think they will. I think that I think there's a market to be nurtured and grown in the Canadian marketplace on sports in Ontario. The interesting part is that also that when you looked at I call it a somewhat semi-mature market because it's not greenfield. Like Bet365 and Betway and Unibet are popular brands. They're there. They have customers. So a lot of those European brands have been prevalent in the for Canadian sports bettors for years. So it's, but I think that the opportunity to grow the market is real, and I think it's a chance of making it more inviting, easier to register and sign up, and you know, that's it's there, and the partnerships that will come with professional sports and other organizations will lend itself to nurturing that market.
And there's no restrictions in any of the provinces, I assume, on remote registration.
No, right now it's starting to shift. So what we've seen with a lot of the provincial lottery sites, you had to live in the province to bet on those sites. If you didn't live in those provinces, you couldn't. Alberta opened their site earlier this year, and they said anybody, as long as you're in the province, but that's going to be the rule in Ontario. So there's going to, you're going to see a lot more of the registration, you know, sign up online. No requirements for in person, because everybody recognizes that, you know, it's, sports is a prominently mobile online product. So
in the U.S. we have the Wire Act, which prevents cross-state wagering for sports betting anyway at this point. Is that the case in Canada or not?
Yes and no. It's not particularly a Wire Act piece, but it is about gaming is really defined by the provincial borders. So as a site, and this is where in the regulated marketplace created, you know, I live in Ontario. I couldn't play on a BC because I didn't live in the province. And that was predominantly the way it went. It's what you're going to see now too is that there's geolocation requirements in the Canadian, in the Ontario regulations. They want people playing in Ontario. And so, you know, having a, we're not going to have a truly national market by any stretch. It's going to be much like it is here in the United States, state by state, province by province. And those markets will be pretty defined because everybody may have a little bit of a different tweak. We're hoping not when it comes to a lot of things, and they allow all the products and and make it customer friendly as possible.
So how many provinces allow online gaming right now? Not sports betting, but including online gaming.
Well, province of Saskatchewan was the only one without an offering. It wasn't that everybody was able to do it. Actually, the laws didn't need to be changed for anybody to get in the online gaming business from the governments, provincial governments operating their sites. So the only province, because Alberta launched early off the end of the pandemic in the spring of 2020, left Saskatchewan as the only province that hadn't put up a licensed site for their jurisdiction. So everybody has something. Ontario's biggest province, almost 50 million people, about 40% of the Canadian population. We'll have everybody be able to come, and that, that's going to, and that's the opportunity everybody's talking about.
Sure, absolutely. So you got the Score company, which was just purchased by Penn National, and I believe they're based in Toronto, right?
They are.
So they obviously were very happy to see this. But do you see any of the other big companies coming in, you know, and getting a foothold there?
We do. We see, I mean, obviously the Levys have family, John Levy and Benji have been working hard for just on building the vision that they've had, and it's right. coming to fruition. I think they will be. I'm one of the several million Canadians who carry their sports app on my phone.
Right, yeah.
Because it's been a great sports information sure. site for years. And I think they're hoping to turn that success into depositing customers.
Right.
You've seen PointsBet set up a Canadian operation, mm-hmm. hire a Canadian CEO, working with Nick Sulski, who was with Monkey Knife Fight, is their chief commercial officer. They're putting down a footprint. Right. Others are starting to take a look at what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's in terms of trying to build the brand. There's also some groups in Canada that are starting from the ground up.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
You know, the Toronto Star, which is mm-hmm. Right. the daily newspaper, mm-hmm. the largest in Canada right. circulation, they're going to build out a gaming platform. Mm-hmm. And the sports is supposed to be part of it for them. They've got they've enhanced some sports betting content
right.
already mm-hmm. in their paper and on their site. So, you know, we're going to see some diversity. It's because of the open licensing model that mm-hmm. Ontario's used. I've talked to people here at G2E who yeah. are, you know, early stage companies are saying, I can come to Ontario.
Yeah,
I can sign up. I can get into the market. Because much of the U.S. market is tethered, and sure, much yeah. of the rest of the Canadian market, when it emerges, will probably be the same. Mm-hmm. So we could be a bit of a great incubator in right. terms of, sure. of doing that. And, you know, one of the great things about even coming to Ontario in particular, but in Canada anyway, and there's great pockets, because, I mean, the BetWorks folks are working out of Vancouver.
Right.
We have a lot of technology talent, mm-hmm. and we also have some great benefits for companies to locating in Canada. A lot of provinces have digital tax credits, mm-hmm. so you get about 30% of your wages back right. on development costs. Mm. But part of that, the underlying part of that Penn purchasing Score,
right.
and Score 2 weeks later saying, we're actually going to announce our brand new office space and doubling the size of our business
yeah.
because of the technology talent that's available to be acquired and hired in Ontario,
sure.
is allowing them to be able to do more of that technology development for Penn and Score and mm-hmm. the properties to be able to get their products out and done. And that's, people are starting to see that. So Gann has offices, Rush Street's right. got present. Mm-hmm. There's people that are starting to put down footprints because right. they can get the talent.
Right. Okay. Right.
One of the most surprising games out of G2E this year was a slot series called Cash Parade from Konami. It made its world debut at the show on the Dimension Top Box. Cash Parade is a five-reel game on the machine's lower 27-inch display and a festive parade of lights blanketing the upper 49-inch portrait displays. So it merges a familiar spin-by-spin chase with fun top-screen bonuses animated across all connected machines. A real exciting expansion for the award-winning Dimension line. To learn more, visit KonamiGaming.com. Now back to our podcast.
I remember a few years ago I was talking to somebody from British Columbia, and you know, they again, the province operates online gaming there, correct? Mm-hmm. And he was telling me that they had less than 50% of the market there because there was so much strength in the gray and black markets. I mean, and he was telling me the government does nothing to block that. Do you think that will change when sports betting starts to spread? Will the government, you know, pay more attention to these illegal sites?
I don't know the answer to that question. So, because I know companies that are looking to say, well, I've got a license in Ontario.
Right.
Well, why should I? Because you haven't really done a very good job of keeping anybody out.
Yeah.
And so what's the value of this right, license? Yeah. And that's a value proposition they have to fulfill. And right. we'd like to see them because we think it's necessary to get them. Yeah, you know, sure. A regulated market is great for the market. It's right. a level playing field. Everybody can compete on the same level. The other jurisdiction, it's really hard because some of this is just the resources of law enforcement, the interest in crime. Because
right. yeah.
the crux of the gray market in Canada is where does the bet occur? Mm-hmm. So if you don't locate your servers and facilities in Canada, you're just accessing it.
Right.
The law talks about the governments being able to oversee and control gaming within their jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sitting in my living room where I live in Toronto, and right. I'm betting on Bet365. Mm-hmm. That bet's occurring in a server that's not in Canada.
Yeah, right.
So is the bet occurring in Canada? So am I really breaking the law? Mm-hmm. No one's ever wanted to find the answer to that question.
Right.
Gaming regulators in many jurisdictions don't have a mandate to go after illegal gaming.
We
regulate legal gaming.
Right.
So it's left to law enforcement and crown attorneys on behalf of the government to decide if they want to prosecute these cases. Well, this is a really not easy question to answer, and taking resources, no one's wanted to touch it. So will it be enforcement? No.
Right.
I don't think there will be. That's where what you get is by offering a regulated environment for someone to sign up to, then you've created an option for companies. In the online industry, obviously, it's not the Wild West that it was.
Right, right.
Companies are publicly traded. They hold multiple licenses. They don't want to be in markets where it's black and white. That's not their choice. And so you're going to see, and I've sat with attorney generals and officials in various provinces and said, well, if you really want to keep them out, create a regulated marketplace, and you don't want anybody to come, you know, set your tax rate at 50%.
Yeah.
Like, that'll guarantee no one's signing up for that.
Right.
And so, and like, and then you've done something. But I said, well, you don't have a place to sign up. There is no regulation. There is no... Mm-hmm. So you've left to the laws of Canada, the criminal code, which is outdated.
Yeah.
Not really relevant in many ways. Mm-hmm. And... Yeah. Gives a lot of uncertainty that's allowed this gray market to flourish. And so you have choice. And Ontario stepped up and said, okay, we do. And we want to create a model where we want to actually get as much of that market in as we possibly can.
Okay, great. So this is finally some good news for the Canadian gaming industry. I mean, you've endured almost 2 years of shutdown and during the pandemic and, you know, open up and shut down again. I mean, it's been a real nightmare for you guys. What's the status now in terms of casinos opening in Canada?
Well, they're open, which is the best part.
It's
it's a perfect no.
Yeah.
We had, like, you know, province of British Columbia, it was, you know, 15 months, 16 months. Mm-hmm. Parts of Ontario, because of size of operations, Ontario said you could open with 50 people.
Right.
Well, that didn't work for Fallsview and Windsor and some other places where there, you know, 100,000 square gaming floors. Yeah. That's a little expensive to open the doors for 50 people. So they didn't. And we're now close to about 50% occupancy. Mm-hmm. There have been vaccine mandates put in a number of places for people to go to, not only casinos, but movie theaters, bars, restaurants, and so on. So we've been absorbing some of that through the industry over the last few weeks. Probably a little less than 50% of the staff are back to work, which is really a concern we have.
Sure, right.
The federal government was very good on the wage support programs, that everybody was in, there was no exclusions, and that supported a wage subsidy up to 80%, up to a maximum, but allowed some people to stay employed, help some companies bring back people sooner. Mm-hmm. We need those to stay in place for a while longer, because no one's... You know, we've had the fourth wave has hit Western Canada particularly hard, not Central Canada. So we've got a ways to go.
Right.
And so it's limited amenities in many properties. The entertainment's not back in many places. But hopefully in the coming months it will. So we've still got a ways to go, but it was hard when people, you know, trying to employees off for 15, 17, 18 months.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's been hard.
And are they still offering subsidies for the people who are not employed again?
Yeah, so there's those programs have continued. Mm-hmm. They were extended partly because I think we just went through a federal election. I don't think the government was intending
to. They're going to give it anyway.
Keep that going while they needed people to vote.
Yeah.
And that we hope will continue a while longer. But a lot of the gaming operators, casino operators in Canada, extended benefits to employees to keep them connected.
Sure.
And providing benefits was key. A lot of the ways they did that, which was helpful for a lot of a lot of people. And then the government supports them pretty good. So it's the challenge now will be as hospitality sectors, or I think across North America, are finding getting people to come back to work.
Sure. Right.
Some people have chosen not to be in so public-facing careers anymore, and others have just said, I've got a time, I'm going to take it, and I'm going to do what I do. And I think, you know, as the summer comes to a close and we'll see how the caseloads go, we'll see what happens. But I know that there's, they need some more capacity in the casinos to be able to start bringing more people back. That's really been the challenge.
So how has the revenue been since the casinos that have reopened at you know, as much maximum capacity as they allow?
Well, some have had, you know, some went through this open and closed
right.
phase too, which mm-hmm. wasn't helpful for a lot of right. people. Like, happened a lot in Ontario. Alberta had a very robust opening. Mm-hmm. With they had very strong capacities. They saw their business bounce back.
Right.
To then some and more. It has been good. I mean, let's be honest. But the being able to, you know, casino floors to manage yield, get the right players in.
Right. Yeah.
They've done a great job. Mm-hmm. So it's they're feeling confident that they're on right. the right path. It's and some facilities have had great numbers, and some are better. You know, could do better.
Right.
But they're really encouraged. Like, the customer demand came. A lot of surveying during the COVID shutdowns and mm-hmm. wanting to come back and right. when you come back and making sure they could make their customers feel comfortable. Is it safe? What do we need to do? Mm-hmm. We, you know, the industry across the country adopted a mask mandate early on.
Right.
Really is the way to make sure people felt comfortable and employees mm-hmm. felt safe coming back to work. And that went over well, and that was right. a good start. And they wanted to see people cleaning. They wanted to see that in right, action. Yeah, it wasn't. Right. It was very important. A lot of learnings for everybody, I think, for this process too,
sure.
and how to do things a little more efficiently. And mm-hmm. and so it's been positive, but we need more capacity right, to really right. get things back.
Sure, sure.
And that's the challenge.
So travel between the U.S. and Canada was restricted for months and months, and it's just recently reopened with a quarantine requirement, of course. I mean, with a vaccination requirement, of course. Have you seen more visitors from the U.S. coming to Canada?
The Windsor border, because a lot of it was driving traffic. Right. There was a lot of flying back and forth.
Yeah, sure, right.
But the land borders, you mm-hmm. couldn't drive across.
Right. Yeah.
And that, you know, Windsor said, that's great, sure. we can reopen, but we've yeah. got a lot of our kids in
come. Falls View as well, right?
yeah. yeah. And so the change with that in the last few weeks was very good for them, because they have seen their customers come back. Mm-hmm. And so that drive-in market for those has started to return.
Right.
And that's, you know, they're still, again, it's early, because there's COVID testing requirements, and so you got to COVID tests.
Sure, right, yeah.
You know, in both sides, and so it's not as simple as it used to be.
Yeah, right.
But people are attempting to do it, and they want to do it, and
sure.
so that's a sign. Everybody's, you know, we constantly have talked to governments about streamlining processes, mm-hmm. because things even like pre-screening and
right, sure.
contact tracing mm-hmm. created log jams at front doors.
Sure, right, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and now that we've moved to a vaccine mandate, so can we just do that?
Yeah.
That's pretty much enough, we think. Right. And,
yeah.
you know, and public health officials right across the country have been, you know, said to the casino operators, you guys do this great.
Yeah.
You do it better than anybody else.
Yeah.
And so there's that, when we keep saying, that's great, can we keep...
right.
we'll keep at this, because a lot of the gaming rig put those, like they have in many jurisdictions,
sure,
right. a lot of those health and safety requirements right into the mm-hmm. regulations.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, well, we do that every day. So this is right. just one more set of regulations everybody has to abide by. We'll do it because it's our license, it's
sure, right.
our livelihood. So compliance has been great, and the industry and recognized. So we're hopeful that we can kind of keep encouraging the okay. capacity movement.
So, you know, the big buzz in the industry is cashless gaming now. I don't know if you've been to the Sightline booth, but they've mm-hmm. got some great examples of how cashless. Where does Canada stand on cashless transactions in a casino?
It's starting that evolution. That's one of the things why we started working on it during the pandemic with our regulatory committee, just to say, this is coming.
Yeah, sure.
We should be one. Then mm-hmm. we actually started it before the pandemic started.
Sure,
and so
right,
it was like,
yeah.
oh, we should pick up the pace a little bit
right.
here. And we did. And it was really good, because just getting an education level, one, on regulators,
sure,
two,
right.
understanding the operators that start to do this, because you have people like Sightline, everybody's got great technology.
Yeah.
And creating that new customer experience, especially as Ontario, for example, is allowing the casino operators to launch online sites and mm-hmm. creating that account-based wagering that you
right.
can take from one to the other, potentially. I think it's Canadians are very open to that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my pitch to a lot of the folks in the industry and why we need to get on this and
yeah.
create some regulatory standard and get some understanding of the product. You know, we don't want to be the novelty act is the last place that,
right.
you know, you can still only use cash.
Right, yeah, exactly, right.
you know,
yeah.
go over there to the ATM,
yeah,
and
right.
you give us $6 for the privilege of taking it, and you walk back
yeah,
over
right,
and give
yeah.
it to us. Because there's a generation, my kids, who
sure.
don't carry cash.
Right, no.
It's on their phone, on their device, and so we got to be relevant, stay with the time and the detection,
yeah,
customers' preferences. And in Canada, we've had a high penetration rate of cashless transactions.
Right.
Our banking network is fairly integrated, mm-hmm, so we've always had debit, tap debit.
Yeah,
you know, it's all on the phone, but hugely high penetration rates, sure, for all,
right,
of that stuff.
Right.
So it's inevitable,
yeah,
that it needs to happen,
yeah,
and I think everybody's just now. And I think the industry's done a great job. I mean, some of the work that the committee through the AGA, mm-hmm, and UNLV,
right,
mm-hmm, on understanding the RG issues,
right,
I think that's really important, and anxious to see the work that they're continuing to do as they study it and as people begin to adopt. And will a pandemic and people's capital expenditure, mm-hmm, get in the way of adoption?
Right.
I think that's what we have to wait and see, because,
yeah,
you know, I think I think this one is the inevitability is in front of us. It's coming. It's, they got to get on with to be,
sure,
relevant to the customer, and creating that, you know, that complete 360 experience and being, mm-hmm, able to say, oh, you've got an account with us and you can use it all over our property, and it's, you know, if Starbucks can do it, why can't we?
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And there's, I mean, the technology, you know, what Sightline and Every and then others have put out is fantastic.
Yeah.
NRT Technology is a great Toronto-based company.
Sure.
Has been,
yeah, yeah,
leading the forefront too,
mm-hmm,
and we're, you know, I think it's great. It's, it's, you know, in Canada we were slow to adopt on the internet gaming side, and,
mm-hmm,
I don't want, we can't be the last man in, we can't,
right,
leave this behind, we gotta get on top of these things,
right,
and so it's, so far so good.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens.
So distributed gaming is available in a couple of provinces in Canada.
Eight provinces, actually.
Quite a few then.
Yeah.
Where do you guys stand on that? Where does the CGA stand on that?
We've always supported it.
Yeah.
It's come with balance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, I,
yeah,
know that there's been some challenges in markets in the United States around,
yeah,
balance, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got casino operators invest a lot of money,
sure,
and all of a sudden something,
yeah,
comes along,
yeah,
and changes that. That's what we've had in Canada. No one's... they've been stable. They haven't really changed,
mm-hmm,
in the last decade or more. What we're seeing actually is a lot of the provincial lottery corps run those networks. You're seeing what I call some roll-up strategies.
Right.
More machines in fewer locations.
Yeah.
And creating gaming destinations.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see some of that accelerate actually,
mm-hmm,
in Canada, because depending on some provinces, roll out sports betting.
Right.
It's a natural to say, okay, roll it up, and I can,
mm-hmm,
I can put in a kiosk,
yeah,
screens, and F&B, and I've created a pretty nice gaming facility,
right,
for sports and machine play,
sure,
and electronic games,
mm-hmm,
even table games to go into those.
Yeah.
And so in some of the provinces, I think Atlantic Canada, Atlantic Lottery Corporation, has,
mm-hmm,
been really looking at what they can do in terms of new offering and changing it up. Really to up the experience.
Right.
It's not a couple machines in the corner of a bar.
Right, yeah.
But it's really trying to build a gaming environment.
Right.
Working with a private operator of a bar or facility or chain. And,
sure,
they've done some of that in Atlantic Canada. Quebec's been talking about it. Alberta's been looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the province is realizing,
okay,
we may need to do a little better job at the offer.
Sure.
And what they've seen is the revenue pays off,
mm-hmm,
too. The yield is much higher in some,
sure,
of those.
And these are all regulated.
All regulated.
So.
Yeah, we have the issue of skill game in,
right,
Canada is again unsettled in law. What's a,
right,
skill game?
Well, we've got that here too.
And we've, yeah, and we've,
right,
had some of the same issues.
Mm-hmm.
And we've, as an industry association, we've raised some issues with in Ontario,
mm-hmm,
and other just where they're starting to pop up.
Right.
And say, hold on a second, these are games they're playing for prizes of money.
Right.
We got to be sure that you know. They should be regulated if you're going to do it. If you need to fix the laws, but otherwise they need to come out.
Yeah.
We've seen, you know, in Ontario there's 30 some odd bingo halls with class 2 machines.
Yeah.
Between 25 and,
mm-hmm,
100 change in some,
right,
of them. But it's limited locations and,
right,
and still licensed,
right,
still regulated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that the province of Ontario doesn't have. Distributed gaming. So,
sure,
some of these are showing up in bars, and it's like, hang,
right,
on a second. In markets, actually, where there is licensed and regulated distributed gaming,
mm-hmm,
they're not showing up as much.
Right, right.
And that's so, Ontario and British Columbia are the two provinces that don't have.
Okay.
And I don't suspect will anytime,
yeah,
soon.
Okay. All right, one last question. Where do you stand on responsible gaming? I know Canada it has a little mini industry for the studies on responsible gaming.
We do.
Some of them are good studies, some aren't. How do you evaluate these studies when they come out, and what's the commitment of the CGA toward responsible gaming?
We've been very supportive of organizations, again, that doing, you know, as we talk about research and programs that are effective and work.
Right.
And there's a lot of ways you can, academic research can go off and look at a whole lot of things that may not actually be based in any kind of operational or experience or even reality in some cases, but they're done. And we do, there's a bit of cottage industry because there's a lot of research dollars available, but a lot of expertise has come. And that partly came out of the commitment from the governments being involved in the gaming industry early on. And so the GameSense program, which is one that was developed early on, that MGM uses in their properties in the U.S., and Massachusetts, Oregon uses it, four other provinces in Canada use it, because it's a great informed choice player education tool.
And it's player controlled, not casino controlled, or government controlled.
Exactly. We went through a phase where everybody studied machines, and you should do this to a machine, or that to a machine, this to a machine. And none of that stuff is effective.
Right.
A lot of researchers will tell you that. And you've got to have a conversation about educating players for healthy behavior. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what we have to do. And we continue to do. There's some really good work being done. A lot of work being exported to other parts of the country, a lot to the UK at this point in time, because there's a sector that didn't want to participate for, or didn't step up when they needed to, and they're getting rules and regulations handed, because government will show up to, if we need to fix it, we're coming with a baseball bat.
If you don't do it, they'll do it, right?
We'll come with a baseball bat and we'll fix it our way. And, you know, we've always had this good dialogue, and we're having it already on sports, because obviously we've seen a lot of advertising, on. And cognizant of what the backlash can lead. We saw in the UK go from 100 miles an hour to zero pretty quickly, and that impacts your business. The Ontario regulator in drafting their standards for sports and online gaming as an open market have taken a very measured approach. Actually, their first iteration of their standards, there was no incentive in offers. Now they can be, but they're the customers you already have to have in your relationship, so no mass advertising of those things. So if they're in your database, you can offer them whatever you like. Odds, bonusing, cash incentives. But on the broader mass market appeal, it's not. And that's fine, because it's, as they've said and we said to them, it's easier to loosen these things than to ratchet them back. And so what they learn as we go, maybe that will change in time.
Right.
And I think there's learnings from places like Australia and other places where we can, whether it's the life cycle of the sports business emerging into markets. And the competition's heavy, and the M&A activity has shown no signs of slowing down. What does the market settle into, and then all of a sudden maybe, you know, it matures a bit more and everything settles down and it finds its place. We got to get through the hump without in demonstrating that we're not, this isn't a reckless free-for-all, but there's very measured companies. The companies are doing great work in being able to educate players and provide tools, and we just need to keep talking about that.
I just saw the Washington Capitals are going to have the Caesars sportsbook logo on their sweater. I can't wait to see what the Canadians or the Maple Leafs put on their sweaters.
Yeah, I know. It's Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment. Everybody's waiting to find and see what, because as a sports conglomerate that, you know, as their ownership group is, you know, one third Bell Media and one third Rogers Media. They own the two sports networks, the cell phone providing companies, and so they are the mass media companies that are is the biggest sports franchise in the country. Who's your partner? What are you going to do? What's going to happen? So, it was a big deal, because it's funny. The first year they've got helmet stickers last year appeared so the Canadian banks have come and lined up with so far. So, seeing what ends up on the chest is next. Right. So we'll see what happens. I'm curious because I suspect we'll. There's going to be some pretty good offers on the table to get that space.
Well, Paul, thanks for joining us. It's great to catch up with you. Looks like the industry future is bright in Canada. You know, once we get through this pandemic and things open up.
Yeah, it is. The beginning of the pandemic, things looked a little dark because we had a bill, because Parliament didn't sit in Canada for a few months, and the bill was sitting there. Okay, this isn't going to work this time. things have turned around, and yeah, it's a great opportunity. Governments have given us a lot of work. I can say I've been busier than ever, which is great, because yeah, we've got a really good future and great opportunity. So.
No time for a summer friend, no time for the love you send.
Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast, with special thanks to Konami Gaming. Reach out to your Konami rep to learn more about the latest slot series coming soon, or visit them online at konamigaming.com. To learn more about the gaming industry in Canada, visit ggbmagazine.com. To get all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the recovery from the pandemic, delivered to your desktop every Monday morning, sign up for free at ggbnews.com by using the code GGB180. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes or Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.